You are now staring into the twisted mirror.
Welcome to the Twisted Mirror. Man's relationship with nature is a complicated one. Those who tend to commune with her find a sense of tranquility. Away from the constant invisible stress of noise and light pollution, when you can hear a breeze flow from one tree to the next, or see even the farthest twinkling of stars spread along the night sky like fairy dust, there is space to think of great things, things bigger than the day-to-day stresses of daily life. You may even hear a voice, your own, speaking to you in new ways. But you may also hear other things. Things that cannot be explained. Excuse me, I don't mean to startle you. I know this might come off as a bit scary, me coming up on two young women in the woods with the sun setting and all, but I mean no harm. I promise. Oh, this blood. It's mine. That's why I'm even bothering. I need a place to sit for a bit and rest. I fell a bit earlier and night's falling and I just need a warm fire to sit by for a bit, and I promise I'll be on my way. Here, you can check my backpack. I've got nothing on me. See? I'm just no spring chicken anymore, and I need a little rest so I can patch this thing up, and then I'll be out of your hair. Promise. I'm feeling a little better now, but I hit my head and was a little out of sorts, wasting too much energy trying to beat the dark, but looks like the dark's beating me. May I have a seat? Just to warm up my old bones. Have a drink, and then I'll be out of your hair. Oh, thank you so much. You have no idea how much I appreciate this. Yes, coffee would be a dream right now. Well, I've been out here for a while. I'm on my way to commemorate something that happened a while ago. It's a hell of a trek to get there. Thank you. Delicious. What I'm commemorating, I guess I have to make a confession then. If I told you, you'd be the first two people. I don't know if I'll be around much longer anyways. If I tell you, it might keep me around longer than you were probably hoping, but you asked, so here goes. Here's my confession. It starts way earlier than these woods. Sometimes a personal tragedy finds a way to become a shared one. One that reverberates through generations. I often wonder if any of this would have happened if not for my own tragedy when I was 15. I lost my father at that age in a terrible accident, entirely senseless and preventable. When I tell you, and I hope this doesn't offend you kind of girls, that he was a man's man. And I don't mean that in a blustering, chest-puffing kind of way. I mean that he could build a house from foundation and studs to the last shingle. That he spent much of his time fathering me, his son, passing down the lessons he learned. He was quiet but friendly, willing to lend a hand or lend his tools to neighbors. There was no performance in his day-to-day. He was a man who loved nature. Every summer, we'd spend weeks out in the wild, and as I got older, we brought less and less, learning how to survive off the land. Fishing, hunting small game, picking berries and mushrooms. He taught me the ones that would drop you dead within the hour, the ones that would put you on a trip to another planet, though we never partook, and the ones that could feed us. I was the only child of my parents. Not by choice, they just could never make another. Anyway, that day my mother was out doing motherly errands, so it was me who found him. Lying, twisted in the backyard. His body already cold to the touch. A ladder propped up against the house just beside him. It never made sense. Why, of all the times he had preached to me to never go on the roof without a tether, that he did. And that the one time he did, he would fall exactly in such a way to fracture his skull. There were no tools around, so we could only guess he was up there to adjust the antenna. It had been windy earlier in the day, and he must have gotten around to it because when I turned on the TV later to test my theory, the signal was as clear as a bell. You know, I often ask myself if he was as great of a man as I recall. We didn't live long enough for me to see his flaws as a man, for me to disappoint him. No one's an angel, but maybe finding him limp, the blood circling his head like a gleaming crimson halo, maybe the sight of him erased the bad memories, maybe his blood washed away those sins. And so, I journeyed into the rest of manhood without the man I thought would guide me. My mother did her best, she truly did, but she wasn't him. I had him long enough to know what he wanted of me, and I guess, despite his body being underground, his lessons persisted. He wanted me to get an education. Despite his blue-collar background, he loved to read, loved to learn, and didn't begrudge an education. So I went to school and decided to dedicate myself to teaching, to educating kids who didn't have access but loved to learn, like my father. I graduated young, idealistic, and you may find this hard to imagine looking at me now, but sun-kissed, long with lean, strong muscles built by a lifetime of manual labor. I felt like I could fix the world, that boldness and audaciousness of youth. I was outgoing and outspoken, and I made my mark quickly as a teacher in an inner-city school for gifted young boys. You're an EMT. Well, then yes, I'd love your help. It's not broken, just a lesion. Some bone bruising, maybe. Oh, yes, I'd love some. I've built up an appetite. Thank you for your hospitality. I know the woods can be a scary place and make a stranger seem more foe than friend. Anyway, I learned quickly that while books and math were important, much of my education, my true education, was from the most important educator in my life, my father. I learned that so many of these boys were not blessed with a father at all, or one who showed any interest in them. Some thought the raising should be left to the other parent, or their backs and spirits were broken after a long day of work, preferring to nurse a scotch over their own children. Some of these kids had never seen anything other than a sewer rat or a pigeon. The only mountains they had ever seen were the crumbling concrete man-made buildings. The only rivers they had ever laid eyes on were too filthy to fish. The stars in the sky were erased by the constant toiling of the city. Had they ever truly seen a moonless night? Had they ever heard the call of an owl, the screech of a fox? Or only the screams of a city bus blasting past their bedroom? Forgive me, I tend to soliloquize. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it then.
Whoa.
Oh, no. It hurts, but it hurts good, like you're fixing it. I'll keep going. It'll distract me from the pain. So where was I? I wanted to pass on my father's legacy, to expose these kids to the wild, to show them something outside of the city, the loud quiet of nature, where they could inhale cleansed mountain air, where they could see how big and wild the world was, where they could use their bodies, you know, to build a fire, a camp, catch fish, where they could be wild boys away from the threats of their impoverished neighborhoods. So, I petitioned to take a few boys out on a camping trip. Any kids could sign up, and with their parents' permission, we'd take out 5 at a time. The response was overwhelmingly positive. We had far more than 5 sign up, but I handpicked the inaugural group. 5 boys I felt needed it the most in some way. There was one other teacher who would be going. Her name was Louisa Williams. Forgive me, but I was a young man, and I have to admit, I was excited to be spending this trip with her. I had a huge crush on her. Not to brag, but I had no trouble with the ladies back then, but there was something about her that I found intimidating, elusive. She wasn't someone, at least for me, that I recognized as beautiful the second she walked into the room. Not that she was unattractive, but has that ever happened where you don't realize how attractive someone is until after you really look at them? It wasn't until she spoke, until she commanded my attention, that I fell for her, that I noticed her. Her beauty unraveled in front of me as she spoke, like a slow blooming flower. She had dark, long hair, wore no makeup as far as I could tell, and wore these enormous prescription glasses that were popular at the time. She drowned in big sweaters and skirts and tall boots. She exuded this warmth with her smile. I felt instantly comfortable around her. There was no breaking in period. She was funny and smart and sophisticated, but down to earth. I instantly wanted her to like me. I felt like a boy again, unable to read signals that had been so clear to me from other women. Did she feel the same, or was she simply so easy to love? Did the glow of her light make everyone feel like they were wrapped in a blanket beneath the cozy glow of a reading lamp on a chilly night? I hoped our time together in the woods would break through, that the moonlight would illuminate secret signals I could not see in the glare of the fluorescent lights of the break room. Yes, that feels much better. I have some antibiotics I carry for emergencies like this. My goodness, thank you. This looks delicious. So, we boarded a rental van at 4 in the morning. The boys' eyes were puffy with sleep, but they were excited to get out of the city. Louisa showed up, her big glasses sliding off her nose as she waved and smiled, and an oversized wool sweater and hiking pants tucked into well-worn boots. A giant backpack overwhelming her frame. She, too, had some experience camping, as if I needed any more reasons to feel she was perfect. When we left, the forecast was good. The days would be in the 60s and high 50s, and nights dropping to 40s and 30s. The kids only needed to be dressed for the weather, and we supplied all the gear and the food following some fundraising efforts from the school's biggest donors. Excuse me, this is delicious, but I think it's rude to chew and talk. Just one more bite, and I'll keep going. Well, we got to our destination that morning with time to hike, with a break for lunch, and then We'd hike the rest of the way until we'd stop to set up camp and cook dinner. The plan the next day was to hike just a half day down the river, where we would set up camp again, and I would teach the boys how to fish and spend time lounging with some stargazing at night. We then reverse course the next morning. This was a simple plan. While we would be deep in the wilderness, the hike itself wasn't too strenuous or hilly. Most of the path would be soft under our feet. Luisa agreed with me. I wasn't irresponsible. I wasn't pushing these kids too hard. Yes, it might test their minds and bodies. These kids had never had to walk great distances like this, but they were entirely capable. That's the point of these things, to provide the right dose of discomfort so that you can emerge just that much stronger. We weren't so precious with kids back then. The kids were lulled to sleep by the drive once the initial excitement wore off, and I was glad for it. They would come out of the van refreshed. On the trip were the following boys: Jesus Garcia, Patrick O'Malley, Carl Williams, Daryl Foreman, and Michael De Leon. I picked them as individuals, but also as a group, feeling that they could benefit from each other's presence outside of the social politics of middle school. Michael De Leon was a special kid. He was smart. He was good. You know what I mean? Just good. And I felt he had a strong future in front of him if we could keep him on course. One day he could be a brilliant politician or lawyer or something. He made other kids around him good. A rare gem. And I saw him as the anchor. Carl Williams had a spark. You know, the kind of kid who feels right at home with adults, who can crack a joke, sometimes the kind you don't want to laugh at because it's a little too comfortable. He was always singing, always up, boisterous. I wanted to harness that. I wanted to push him. In the real world, a personality like that is a gift if guided properly. Led astray, it can be a curse. And it can be extinguished. Daryl Foreman was a gifted athlete, but we needed to get his grades up. He needed focus and guidance. His dad was out of the picture, and I felt he really needed the structure of an adult male figure. His mother agreed. Jesus Garcia was a naturally gifted artist. He had something that couldn't be taught. He had already won a few competitions and even made the paper. And there was something about him, a non-conformist streak. I felt he needed to get to know his peers better since he had trouble fitting in. Patrick O'Malley was our troubled kid. Rough home life. Tested off the charts, though, but fought us on any and everything, including homework. I hoped this group could ground him. I hoped he could see Luisa and I not as enemies, but as people he could trust. I hoped that he could bond with someone like Michael, someone who could soften him a bit. And that was our crew. All seven of us. It started out as good as I could have hoped for. We hiked about an hour and a half, maybe two, keeping a healthy clip with stops to point out plants and animals. We ate lunch, and we had another 2 hours until we'd stop and set up camp. I'd say just short of an hour after lunch, I noticed Carl grimacing and his gait looking a little off. I nudged Luisa, asked her if she saw what I was seeing. She nodded. I walked over to Carl. "Everything okay, buddy?" I asked. "Yeah, Mr. Piper," he said. "But it's easy to pick up on a kid lying, especially as a teacher." I looked down at his shoes. Those weren't the ones I saw him show up wearing to the bus stop. I was adamant with everyone that they were broken-in shoes. These were dusted up from the hike, but I could tell it was all surface dirt. These shoes hadn't seen days and miles. "Did you change your shoes?" I asked. Carl looked down in shame. I hated those ugly sneakers my mom wanted me to wear. I put my hand up to his chest to stop his forward progress and blew a piercing whistle that stopped everyone in their tracks and echoed through the hollow spaces of the forest. Luisa jogged to me. She asked me what was going on. I told her, "I think Carl's going to need his foot examined." He protested, embarrassed, of course, but We had already hiked for hours. We were farther now from the van than the campsite. But blisters can get out of control fast, and I only hoped he wasn't hiding it for so long that it couldn't be helped. Garl winced and hissed as I pulled off his shoe, revealing a red stain on the heel of his white sock. "The other side too?" I asked. He shook his head, but I checked anyways. He wasn't lying. Louisa pulled out the first aid kit. Patrick huffed. "I told you not to. Way to go, idiot." "That isn't helping," I said. "Come on," Michael said, leading Patrick away from the scene. He had a natural way of diffusing Patrick, just a remarkably emotionally healthy kid from what I recall. Louise and I did the usual, disinfected it, wrapped it up, patted it, did everything we could to shield the wound from friction. The boys paced around, kicked things, chased each other. The notes of their activities receded into the background as I focused on Carl and how this could impact the rest of the trip until I heard, "You hear that?" I was just packing everything away when he asked. There was something in the shape of his voice that piqued my interest. "Hear what?" Michael asked. "That sound?" Jesus asked. He was the quiet type, so his participation got my attention. That's when I turned. They all had their chins up like satellites looking for a signal. "Yeah, like a song, or is it a voice?" Daryl asked Jesus, walking over to him. I looked over at Louisa, cocked an eyebrow. She shook her head and shrugged. "All right, very funny, guys," I said, coming to my feet. "Let's save the scary movies for the campfire. We're behind, and we gotta get going to beat the sunset." "We're not playing any tricks, Mr. Piper," Daryl said. "You guys eat one of the mushrooms Mr. Piper said to stay away from?" Patrick instigated, as usual. "Nah." Daryl looked at Jesus again for reassurance. "Never mind," Jesus said. "It's nothing." Daryl paused as if trying to listen for something. "Yeah, never mind. Must have been the wind or something." Of course, I used it as a teaching opportunity. "Sounds likely. The woods can play tricks on you. That's why we have to stick together. Sometimes you can think you're following a sound and end up walking in circles. Sometimes animal cries sound like a woman screaming. And sometimes the wind sounds like a siren's call." "Like an ambulance?" Carl asked. I'll admit I chuckled at that. Then I got us all walking again and told them about the seductive call of sirens that lured lonely sailors and all the real-world theories about maritime mythology. "So you're saying that the sailors had the hots for walruses? That they thought they were mermaids? They must have been pretty desperate." "Hey, maybe your mom's a mermaid," Patrick casually called out. "If my foot wasn't so messed up, I'd shove it up your..." "All right, guys," Louisa said. "Keep it together. We're all getting a little punchy, but we'll be sitting by the fire in no time. And I might have brought a surprise for you all."
"I think I saw it when you were grabbing the first aid kit," Michael said with a smile.
I think he had a crush on her. He seemed to always have some extra questions for her after school. I couldn't blame him. She gave him a little elbow nudge and held her finger up to her lips to shush him. An hour before sunset, we found a good spot and started setting up camp. We hadn't seen another soul the entire time. We were deep in the woods, deep in solitude. Carl seemed to have stabilized, but I was still concerned. Other than that, things were going smoothly. We ate, and Louisa pulled out her surprise, s'mores, and everyone had a good time. It wasn't until right before I would send off everyone to bed that I felt the air change, a quiet draft flowing through the tree line. The leaves moved as if they were magnetized. The smell of ozone hit my nose. The forecast was clear, but it felt like rain was coming. Not the end of the world, but these kids were about to learn a little bit about camping in the rain. I decided to keep the fire going and shelter it since I had planned to stay up a little longer after sending the kids to their tents. "All right, everybody, get in your tents. It's feeling like there might be some rain, so don't leave anything hanging out. You don't want getting wet." The kids split into two tents, Patrick and Michael in one,
Jesus, Carl, and Daryl in the other. Luisa packed up the food to hang up and away from the camp so as not to tempt the bears. And there was a clap of dry thunder. The boys howled from their tents with nervous laughter. Carl, ever the clown, said some loud prayers to Jesus Christ. "Well, good night," I said to Luisa like an idiot, instead of inviting her to sit with me at the fire like any red-blooded human man would do. I don't know why I was always so bumbling around her. Never was an issue with other girls. She sat down next to me, leaned in, raised her eyebrows like she was up to no good, and pulled something out of her pocket. I heard the clinking of the glass before my eyes could make out their shape in the shadows. Little liquor bottles, the kind you get on airplanes. She whispered, "Is it really a camping trip without a little something?" "I know, wild. Today you probably get us up in the gallows for a couple of swigs while the kids were fast asleep, but it was a different time then. I know everyone says that, but you'll see someday. Someday you'll be judged by tomorrow's rules by people who have the luxury of not yet having seen their world completely shed and grow new skin several times over." Sorry for that awful metaphor. I can be so dramatic. "You know, I think it's the woods, the campfire. It sort of calls for drama, don't you think? The primal ritual of telling stories around a fire. Long before we saved our descriptive flair for the written page, we sat like this. We gave our oral storytelling the full treatment." Is this okay, by the way? I can leave. If you don't want to hear the rest, I can go." No. Don't worry about me. You patched me up real good. I have my stick. I have my 1,000,000 lumens. I can get out of your hair. Far enough away you don't ever have to hear another peep out of me again. You've both been so hospitable. I know how scary it can be out here. Two young women alone. A strange man appearing out of nowhere, covered in blood." "Okay, only if you're sure. So, where was I? Yes. Well, I'll spare you every word exchange, but I, of course, jumped at the opportunity to hang out with Luisa in her tent. Up until then, we had a good rapport. I'd even say we were good work friends, but this was exactly what I'd hoped for. We were talking like real friends. The rain had started to kick in. It was steady, but I'd seen a lot worse. We had a good spot with plenty of cover. I checked on the boys and they were fast asleep, wiped out from all the hiking and excitement and the drone of the rain pelting against their tents. So, I felt comfortable getting a little tipsy. And that's all it was. Tipsy. I had my full wits about me, just a little social lube, a way to get more comfortable with a girl who made me feel like a 10-year-old boy with his first crush all over again. My dad came up. She knew he was gone, but she didn't know the circumstances. She seemed touched by how that shaped me and led me to that very moment in the tent. But not in a pitying way. It was just really easy, you know? And then, as it often happens, tragedy and liquor sprung laughter and he got real giggly. Talking about work politics, she loved my impression of the principal, Mr. Vega. The space between her eyebrows did this scrunching thing when she laughed and her glasses would slip down to the button at the tip of her nose. And then there was this moment. It felt as clear as day. She liked me. I could just tell. "Are you two friends or what? Sorry, none of my business. And I don't care either way. I want to be clear. I'm asking because I bet if you are more than friends, you felt it too. How that person looks at you, how their eyes linger just a millisecond longer on yours, get a little bigger when they look at you. They lean towards you like there's a magnet that they can't resist. How they fiddle with their fingers or hair. It's a dozen little signals your brain processes faster than you can conceptualize. So I just knew. And I went from feeling like an insecure little boy to knowing that she wanted me. At that point, she was sitting so close, another sign. So what I did next might sound ballsy, but It was as sure as the rain beating down on the roof of the tent. I leaned in for a kiss. She didn't pull back, didn't jump away. But I guess I'll never know for sure if she had kissed me back, because then, bam, 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 we both nearly jumped out of our skins. Mr. Piper, Miss Williams. It was Michael, shouting out our names. We both sprung up and I unzipped the tent to find him standing there, drenched. Behind him stood Carl. I asked him what was wrong, because it was clear something was. It's Daryl. He just ran off into the woods. Both Louisa and I shot each other confused glances, and I immediately asked the questions while she sprung into action, readying herself to step out into the elements. What do you mean? He ran out there. He ran out into the woods. Carl shouted from behind. I asked him to slow down, tell me everything they knew. Carl was in the tent with him, so he gave me the most details. He said they were sleeping and Daryl shot up, asked if they'd heard something. Jesus said he did. Carl said he was confused waking up from such a deep sleep, so before he knew it, Daryl had unzipped and bolted out. Didn't put on boots, didn't throw on a coat, he just ran out. I asked about the others. Where was Jesus? Where was Patrick? They didn't know. Jesus followed after Daryl while Carl went to the other tent to wake up Michael and Patrick. Patrick went to investigate and Michael and Carl came to look for us. By the time we gleaned this information, Louisa and I were already geared up and standing outside of the tent. We told the boys to take shelter, take off their wet clothes and get into something dry and to stay put. And I don't think I can convey the frenzy of those moments. Three of the five boys in our custody were unaccounted for in the woods on a cold, rainy night. One, for sure, was not wearing proper clothing and was possibly having some sort of episode. It was an incredibly dangerous situation. The woods can be seductive. Its tranquility is deceiving, but you're only one misstep away from death, especially on a night like that one. A search party at night was not safe, but there was no choice. Time was of the essence, and I had to find these kids. Louise and I decided I would look while she stayed back, so an adult would be waiting if they returned. Plus, we had the two back at camp to look after. I set out into the wet, noisy woods. The rain pellets fired like bullets, drowning out my shouts of the boys' names. My only hope for Daryl was that he was fit. But fitness can't stave off hypothermia or a fall down a ridge. My heart felt like it was inside of my skull, pulsing, drumming. I had so many thoughts all at once. How I had failed. How would I answer for this at the school and to the parents? Why had I not taken him more seriously when he said he had heard something? But Jesus had heard it too. If it was a delusion, wouldn't only Daryl have heard it? If it was real, then why only them? Why didn't I ask more? Did he say it was a voice? A song? What did it say? What did it want? But that was all in the background because I was managing the woods on a pitch black night, trying to find a few needles in a haystack. They had already had quite a lead time as I got my bearings and geared up. The only hope was that the treachery of the conditions would slow them down. All the while, I had to make sure I didn't get lost myself. It felt hopeless. And just when I felt I was about to fall to my knees and cry out to God for help, my flashlight caught something. The edge of the shape of a boy, too short to be Patrick or Daryl. Jesus, oh thank God, I thought as I panned the light to reveal him. He was facing away from me, his arms at his sides, still. I noticed he wasn't wearing a coat, shoes, anything other than what he was probably sleeping in. I should have run up to him, covered him, but that same primal pattern recognition that told me that Louisa wanted a kiss, it told me something was unnatural. It stopped me from running up to him, like it might chase him away like a startled deer if I moved too fast. Jesus! I called out against the deafening pattern of the rain against the hood of my poncho. I called him again, louder, more insistent. It was the weirdest thing. The way he turned around. Like his spine from neck to ass was one rigid rod. He didn't crane his neck. He just turned his whole body to face me, keeping his arms at his sides. I shined a light on him and he didn't shield his eyes, didn't even blink. He looked hollow. Jesus, where is Daryl? Do you know where Daryl is? Patrick? No one is in trouble. I just need to get you back. It's very dangerous to be out here like this. He said something, but I couldn't hear him. He wasn't shouting, just speaking at a normal volume as if I was standing right in front of him. I pulled down my hood just to stop that clapping of the rain against it as I stepped closer. What? He said, I think. She's calling, or it's calling, or maybe even, do you hear it calling? I thought back instantly to the sirens. Had I planted an idea in their heads? Had I caused this? Was there an animal out there playing with their heads? But surely I would have heard the scream of a fox or cougar. And I said something like, okay, let's get you back to the camp so you can get dry and we'll talk about it. And then it happened so fast. He just turned and bolted, ran away as fast as he could into the dark night. I tried to chase him. But it was so dark and wet, and then, bam! Have you ever been hit square in the nose? I mean, really took it like a punch or a high-speed soccer ball dead center. It stops you in your tracks. They're the balls of the face, I tell you. It took my breath away. The pain, the shock of it. I thought someone had hit me in the face with a bat. So I had that sharp shock of fear on top of the pain. It took me a second or two to get my bearings as my eyes filled with tears. It wasn't a bat. It wasn't anyone. It was a branch dangling right in front of me. I don't know if the wind kicked it into my face or if I had plumb ran right into it. That's the thing that drives me crazy about movies, or more like the crap people talk about. You know the trope, always making fun of a damsel running in the woods, tripping over things, falling down hills. Well, you know this, ladies. You're out here. If we put this fire out on a night like this, with the moon barely out and the cloud cover, you'd hardly see your hand in front of your face. But the audience is watching this well-lit scene for the benefit of their viewing pleasure, and they have the nerve to judge the panicked girl running for her life through uneven, pitch-black terrain. Yeah, I had my flashlight, but I was running faster than I could see, and then bam! I'm keeled over, my eyes so blurred from the torrent of tears gushing out of my eyes, I thought I had broken my nose. Maybe I did, because then the blood started gushing out. And that's when I realized I had lost control. No shit, right? But I don't mean that some boys had gotten lost to begin with. Shit can happen in the woods. But I felt I could find them, and when I did, they'd come running at me, full of relief. I felt I could handle things. I felt I could still manage the situation. And yeah, that was probably the unbridled arrogance of a 20-something-year-old boy. But when these things happen, typically people want to be found, right? They go missing by accident. But that's when I understood. Whatever was happening, whatever they were doing, they didn't want to be brought back, at least not yet. So I had lost control. Truly. How was I going to find three boys during a downpour in the middle of the night out in the woods? Two of whom I was sure had run out of their own volition. And now I was hurt. I just I was out of my depth. I had lost any sense of what was happening or how I could get these kids back home safe. As I tried to stem the river of blood, I started to have these dark thoughts. How would I tell Principal Vega, who I begged to trust me with this program, and their parents? How would I explain this? How could I? Of course, Jesus was long gone at this point, and I decided I needed to get back and regroup at camp. And I had to figure out how bad my face was. I was seeing stars, clinging to consciousness. Getting back to camp was tough. I was concussed, probably only getting by on the pure adrenaline pumping through me. And even in my despair, as I stumbled back, I called out their three names over and over in a shaky chant. Daryl, Jesus, Patrick, knowing it was pointless, knowing that they had chosen to disappear into the black mass of the woods. Every now and then I'd allow myself to lapse and hope for a miracle that they'd all be there when I got back, that it would be a cruel prank. Or I'd wake up in my tent and this would have been a nightmare triggered by bearing the responsibility of these young lives. As I neared the camp, though, I heard Louisa's voice calling out louder and louder. But it wasn't the same chorus I had repeated until it became like a song I couldn't get out of my head. No, as I got closer, I could hear she was calling for a different name. Carl. I picked up my pace and followed her voice until I saw the camp. I called out her name, tasting blood as I did. I asked her what was going on, and when she saw me, the already panicked look in her face, her eyes, usually so free of fear or worry, they reflected a horror. The whites of her eyes were like blood moons. The brown parts were taken by the crazed flames of the campfire. The next seconds were filled with crosstalk, her asking me about my face, if I was okay, while I tried to explain what I had seen, while she also explained the equally urgent matter of Carl. After having suddenly been overtaken, like he had heard something, got up, looked out towards the woods, and took off. Before I could ask for Michael, or maybe he had been there all along, I caught sight of him, nervously pacing around us. Of all the boys who had marched through the woods with us, only Michael remained in our immediate custody. In my state of shock, I tried to turn and run back out. I had no plan. I just felt like I had to do something to keep moving. And I'll remind you, I took a large branch to the face, lest you question my camping guide abilities. But Louisa grabbed the back of my poncho and pulled me back, screaming no, that I was hurt, and we had to tend to my injuries, and we had to form a plan. We had to get our heads on straight and figure out what was happening. She was right, but fighting the urge to mindlessly chase took all of my willpower. We sat down by the fire. Louisa whipped out the first aid kit. She ordered Michael to sit by us. As she cleansed my wounds, she asked Michael questions. Did the boys say anything else? Had he heard anything? Does he have any idea what this odd behavior could be about? Was it planned? Some kind of rebellion against authority? I watched in awe of her toughness, the way she managed to corral the disorder of a stunned, injured colleague and a confused and terrified young boy. But Michael had nothing for us. He said he didn't know anything, that it happened so suddenly. He didn't think Patrick ran out there for the same reasons as the others, at least not initially, that he was simply trying to help. That Michael told Patrick he was going to get us, and Patrick said he'd try to stop them. I believe that. Patrick was a troubled kid, but he wasn't a bad kid. That part of him, the one willing to run after some classmates in distress, that was the one I had hoped to reach on this trip. All he said was that he knew that Daryl, Jesus, and Carl had heard something, even when they hadn't explicitly said it. Something in their eyes changed. In Carl's case, he had been mid-sentence talking about how much trouble the boys were going to be in when he abruptly stopped, tilted his head, you know, like when you hear something in the distance. Michael tried to ask him what was going on, but he raised his hand up, signaling him to stop, and just walked to the edge of our camp. Something about his body language was off, Michael said. Limp, as if in a trance. I knew what he meant because I had seen it in Jesus. And Michael kept calling him, and Luisa, she was walking the perimeter, shining her flashlight, calling the other boys' names, so it took her a second to notice what was going on with those two. She turned just in time to see him take off, just sprint from a dead stop, but he was fast, and she ordered Michael not to chase him. She knew how quickly things could get worse running out into the dark woods. Case in point, my face. Luisa and I deliberated how we should go forward. Should we wait until sunrise? Should one of us hike back to civilization as fast as we could while the other searched? Would it be better for both of us to search? Would we be wasting precious time diverting one person away from the immediate effort? Then Michael chimed out of nowhere. Mr. Piper, remember when you were telling us about sirens? I'll be honest, at first I was annoyed. But just as soon realized where he might be going, and I immediately regretted my educational moment earlier that day. I told him I did recall. Do you think maybe this is them? Like, when they heard it earlier? Remember, Daryl had said he heard something. He said it was like a voice. Maybe like a hum? He couldn't really say, and then it went away, and you mentioned sirens. Michael, sirens aren't real. They're mythical, like mermaids, like dragons, I told him. Yeah, I know, but they aren't really fake. Like, you said mermaids might have been walruses. What if there are real things like sirens? Maybe not beautiful, but some sound that lured the men? I don't know about that, Michael, but it's not real. Then why are they all hearing something? Why are they all running out there into the cold? It doesn't make sense. I said he was right. It doesn't make sense that they would go out there. The woods at night are a scary place, and yes, boys like to act like tough guys, but at the end of the day, they're kids, and kids are usually afraid of going out into the dark woods during a rainstorm. But maybe there is something we don't know, something they are all in on and he isn't, or maybe it's a delusion. Maybe Daryl running out triggered them all to believe they're hearing something, and then I remembered something I was sure would unlock this whole thing. I need you to be honest. You won't be in trouble, I promise. It is important that you tell the truth here. Did the boys try any of the mushrooms we were looking at along the way? Did anyone grab some behind my back? Did anyone eat any? He swore up and down he hadn't seen or done anything, and he doubts they would have pulled that off without telling him or being noticed by him. I believed him. Back to square one. I said to the kid, look, I'm sorry if I scared you, but sirens are from old myths. I was just trying to educate you. They aren't real, and besides, they're ocean creatures. They're not in the woods, even if they were real, which they are not. But if they aren't real, then how would you even know where they live? You said the sailors come to them and never come back. What if something out there called them out there? What if it's not a siren, but something like one out in the woods? You didn't hear anything? I didn't. Ms. Williams didn't either. That's because whatever they heard or claimed to hear isn't real. Something is wrong, but it's not that. It was like he wanted to say more, but stopped himself. The rain had subsided a bit, which reinvigorated my urge to run back out there. My head throbbed really bad, and I knew it would be a mistake, but I just felt compelled, like I'd rather die trying to look than sitting still waiting for night to pass. I've been thinking. I think I should head back down now, Luisa said. We can't afford to wait. I'll be careful. I said, no way. No way should she hike back down in the dark. It just wasn't safe. I said if anyone was going to go down hiking back, it would be me. This was my fault, my responsibility. Don, that's my name, by the way. You're a mess, and who knows how bad you hit your head. We need to get you medical attention. If you broke your nose, the swelling is just getting started. You two can stay put in case they come back. They'll have people to come back to. I didn't like the idea of her going back alone. I was supposed to be in charge, the experienced outdoorsman. And I was supposed to be her hero, earn her affections. But she was right. She was in good health. Mine was questionable. My protests didn't matter anyway. She had made up her mind. She quickly gathered what she needed to travel light. I sat helplessly watching. When she was ready, she knelt down beside Michael and me for one last huddle. I'm going to be fine. I will get back. Don't worry about me. It's going to take me a while to get back if I go nonstop. Maybe a full day. It might be 2 or 3 before help reaches. I don't know. But please don't do anything stupid. Don't push yourself searching during the day if you aren't truly okay. No splitting up. I swear, if I come back and both of you aren't here, I'll find you and kill you myself. I agreed, but I wasn't feeling truthful, to be honest. She stood up and slung her backpack over her shoulder, but then paused. It was clear she was deliberating her last words. Then she looked directly at the kid. And Michael, if you hear it, don't follow. Don't go. Whatever it says, however good it sounds. You tell Mr. Piper, you tell him exactly what you are hearing, but don't you leave. Understood? He agreed. Godspeed, she said. Then she turned her flashlight and we lost sight of her quickly, and then stopped hearing her crunchy footfalls a little bit after that. The night was suddenly quiet, just drops of rain here and there and the crackling of the fire. It didn't feel right for the forest to be so quiet. It usually happens when there are predators afoot, but this time I told myself the downpour had done it. My adrenaline had started to wane, and with it came utter exhaustion and pain. I didn't have the energy to converse, and there was nothing to say. I battled with every fiber in my being to stay awake, to keep an eye on Michael. I'd nod and jump up every few minutes or so. Just as I was nodding away for the umpteenth time, Michael spoke out of the blue.
Mr. Piper, what did you say about what Odysseus did? That was his name, right? To keep himself from going to the sirens.
I wasn't thrilled with the topic coming up again. Mostly because it made me feel guilty about putting ideas in his head. He had his men tie him down so that he couldn't follow them.
I think you should do that to me.
Those words awakened me again, at least for the time being. Are you hearing something? Michael, are you hearing something?
No, I saw their faces. I promised Miss Williams I wouldn't follow it, but I'm not so sure if I can keep it if Odysseus wasn't strong enough, and I'm just 13.
Michael, none of that is real. And I can't tie you down. I can't. I'm your teacher. It would be inappropriate for me to tie you down like that with no immediate reason to. Think about how crazy that would look. Imagine help arriving and you're tied to a tree. It would be insane. I'd have to explain to your parents that I tied you to a tree.
But then I would tell them I asked you to.
I'm the adult here, Michael. I'm the one who answers for it, and rightfully so. He stopped pushing, but I could tell he wasn't happy with my verdict. I felt bad for the kid. He was putting on a brave face, but this was, excuse my French ladies, fucking nightmare. His friends were all out in the woods. I looked like I had gone 12 rounds with Ali, and his other teacher was doing a treacherous night hike. And then there was the voice, sound, whatever it was, this invisible, mysterious threat. He was a kid. Kids still believe in that shit, you know? Boogeymen, monsters. So for me, this was an emergency, a survival situation, which is, of course, horrifying. But for him, this was a horror. Something was luring his friends out there, and he was the logical next one in line.
So I said to him, "Michael, you're the smartest kid I know. You are mature beyond your years. I'm going to tell you something. I brought you out here because I think you're solid. I think you have great potential. I think you're a great influence to the other boys, especially Patrick. You're strong. You haven't heard anything yet, and I think that's because your mind is a steel trap. It can't get to you, whatever this delusion is." He smiled, you know, the wistful kind, appreciative of my words, but also not entirely on board with my decision. He didn't say anything, just fiddled with a small branch, pulling off the leaves and breaking them up into tiny little bits. I woke up to a smoldering fire and an empty campsite. I tried so fucking hard to stay awake, but I didn't even remember falling asleep. It just took me. I called out for Mike despite it hurting my face every single time. There was no trace of him. I felt sick. He had asked me to tie him down and I didn't. I said the right words, gave the right reasons, but it was cowardice. I was too cowardly to admit something wasn't right. That this wasn't adding up. That maybe there are things that aren't so real to us out in these woods. I had expected too much of a child to resist the call, and I was more concerned about my reputation, having to explain myself, than doing whatever it took to keep him in my custody. So, of course, despite feeling like absolute shit and my promises to Louisa, I swallowed a bunch of painkillers and pulled myself together to head out for another search. The morning woods were blanketed with a mist, and the damage of the winds from the night before was prevalent and hindered any attempt at tracking. Not that I was an expert by any means. Survival was my thing, but tracking, not so much. It was the weirdest thing. I wouldn't be able to distinguish any anomalous, disturbed branches or shrubs from those created by the boys versus those made by the storm, but as far as I knew, the rains had stopped by the time I dozed off. I should have been able to find some footprints coming out of the camp, especially with mud being the perfect substrate. But there were none. I couldn't find a single pair of tracks. Maybe it had rained again, but I was barely damp when I awoke, just had a small layer of morning dew on my jacket. So I searched blindly, tried to go back to the spot where I saw Jesus, where the branch slammed me in the face. You know how your mood can change your perception of things? Well, the woods felt lush and alive when we had set up a verdant explosion of nature, but now everything looked barren, gray, soulless. I called out their names, one after the other. Daryl, Jesus, Patrick, Carl, Michael, until I made it back to where I was sure I had gotten hit in the face. Without footprints, it might have been impossible, or at least taken much longer to find that particular area, but it turned out to be easier than I had expected, as if my instincts carried me back to it. The branch in full daylight was thick. The bark was like serrated scales. It dangled by its skin in front of me. I was lucky I wasn't in worse shape for it slamming into my face. My blood was pooled on the earth beside it, dark and gelatinous, swarmed by a colony of ants. I kept going in the direction I thought I saw Jesus run, and I shouted louder now, like there was a real possibility they could hear me. Then I heard something, a crunch, then another and another, someone running. And I started after the sound, screaming louder and louder, almost in tears because I truly believed there wasn't a chance I'd see at least one of them again. I should have learned my lesson about running like that, but it was daytime, so I charged ahead a bit
like a lunatic, singular in my focus. Then someone slammed into the side of me, sent me flying onto my ass like a quarterback getting sacked by a linebacker. Scared the shit out of me. And you're not gonna fucking believe this. I didn't when I first looked up. The person beside me, killed over themselves from the impact, was Louisa. She looked up at me and I could tell from the look in her eyes she couldn't believe it either. We went back and forth, her thinking I had followed her, me explaining I didn't. In fact, I had headed the opposite way, deeper into the woods. That she must have gotten turned around, her saying it's not possible that she was referencing her compass. How I came out of nowhere and she didn't hear my shouts. I'm telling you, that's when I really started to freak out. Not that I hadn't before, but freak out as in something inexplicable was happening. The tree stopping me from chasing Jesus, the footprints vanishing, then this, it felt like the woods were messing with us. See, even if Louisa got turned around, what were the odds she'd end up out here? And all of those vast woods. It felt like something was intentionally keeping us from finding these kids. Something wanted to keep them. Whatever it was, we were back together again, and I had to deliver the awful news that I had lost Michael. And my hope that we'd get back up sooner than later had died with Louisa's return. With all those precious hours lost, we felt we'd be better off sticking together and trying to find the boys right away. They might not survive another night. So we decided to trek ahead to see if we were onto something. That this anomaly had tried to confuse us because we were close, somehow. We kept going, but we stopped calling for them. They didn't want to be found. All calling out would do was let them know we were close. Just the night before, Louisa and I were laughing in a tent, maybe a second from kissing, and now we somberly walk through an increasingly dark forest. The clouds turned darker and darker. The tree cover seemed to block out more and more of the sky. The mist climbed higher. We didn't discuss it, but it felt like the darkness was trying to keep us out, like we were getting closer to something. The only sound between us was our breathing and the crunch of twigs and leaves under our boots. Not a single animal chirped or sang. There wasn't even a single breeze to ruffle the foliage. Then, and it happened so suddenly, so forcefully, I almost let out a yell. Louisa stopped and gripped my arm. Her fingers dug in so hard that if not for the thickness of my jacket, I think her nails would have drawn blood. My arm quaked and I saw it was because she was shaking. I followed her shuddering arm up to her face that was possessed from something within, as if she was seeing something, the worst kind of horror. But behind her eyes, invisible to me. Her voice was so low, so shaky. "Do you hear that?" she whispered. I listened as damn hard as I could. At this point, I wanted to hear it. I wanted to know what the hell this thing was that had stolen my boys. But for Louisa, the look on her face, this wasn't someone who was entranced, put a spell on. Like the others, this was someone who was tortured Have you ever seen pictures of the look of a POW who had been found after years of starvation, or someone on their deathbed from a horrific cancer? There's this look in their eyes like they have seen all the terrors of humanity at once, haunting them. Her eyes, usually squinty with a smile or laugh, that surrounded the little creases that used to make my stomach twist up like a little schoolboy, were wide and sunken. I called to her, begged her to talk to me, tell me what she was seeing or hearing, begged her to let me help her, but she didn't answer. She dropped to her knees and covered her ears. She was in agony, crying, begging, screaming for it to stop. I tried to help her, tried to reach out for her, to bring her back to me, to hear me, but she stood up and started running, dropping her gear along the way. I screamed so hard it hurt, and it was hard to keep up. It was like she knew every step, every exact turn to make, every root or fallen branch to jump over, like it was plotted out, planned. I, on the other hand, stumbled, tripped, and struggled with the woods. It seemed like every obstacle found its way in front of me. And then we broke through the woods, and we were on a ledge overlooking a raw wilderness for miles. Far below, I saw the river where we had planned to spend this day. It happened so fast. So fast. She just looked at me like her eyes were apologizing, but she was helpless to stop it, and she... I'm sorry. She just turned and took one giant step off. I'm okay, just give me a sec. It was silent for a while, and then I heard a thud. I can't recall, maybe both, just one. I knew with how long it took to hear it, that there was no chance. I fell to my knees, and through breathless tears and screams, I crawled over to the edge and peered over, praying, hoping there was a chance that finally luck might be on my side. I saw her far below, a small shape, so far away but not so far I couldn't make it out. Her back was bent the complete opposite way, over a large rock jutting out of the river. A black glistening pool was spreading along it like a drop of ink in water. As I watched, shell-shocked, she slowly slipped off of it into the water and floated away in the current. It was like the forest was covering up the murder. I'll save you the emotions I went through. The physical pain of losing her like that, the groveling and rolling around like a madman, desperate with grief. But by the time I had come back into some form of coherent thought, I realized all hope was lost. Whatever this thing was, had won, if it was even a game. It had our boys, and if I pressed any farther, I would probably be at the base of the mountains, just like Luisa, soon enough. How could I have explained this to anyone? To my boss, to the families, to
Louisa's mother, who she spoke so fondly of. How would anyone believe that five boys ran away of their own free will and that a teacher who loved her life had thrown herself from a cliff? Would they find the alcohol in our systems? The only logical explanation would be that it was me, that I had done it. Motives would be irrelevant, but I am sure they could conjure one. I could think of some stories to fit that make me sick to even repeat them, but they all would make more sense than what had actually happened. I don't know how long I lay there like a corpse, but it was before nightfall when I sat up. I called out and said, "They're yours, okay? They're yours. Yeah, I'm a coward. And if you've lost respect for me, that's okay. But I have to warn you that you might lose more. See, I knew how to survive out here, and that felt like my only option. The skills my father taught me would not be passed down to a bunch of working class and poor kids. They would be used for me to hide, to disappear with the rest of them. God, I'm so sorry about this, about putting this all on you. And I'm gonna get out of your hair now. I had to confess because, you see, I left that pocket of the woods. It was as though she let me leave after I forfeited, like we had an agreement. I've been living in the deep ever since, living off the land, stealing from the occasional campsite, only for what I absolutely need, like a new pair of pants or boots or toothpaste. Never any more than what I need. But I am tired. I'm old. Mountain miles are harder on you than city miles. So I figured it's time to go back. To see if those boys, maybe men now, are out there. Even if it's just their bones, but maybe not. Maybe they are like me, living out there with her providing for them from her verdant bosom. But I suspect she won't be happy I broke our deal, and she probably won't let me out alive this time. That's okay. I'm not afraid anymore. Ugh. If you don't mind, I'll take my bag back. Thank you. If you do your research, you'll probably find the families of these kids. You seem like nice ladies. Maybe you can tell them what happened to their boys and Louisa, give them some closure. I hope I haven't frightened you. I know a man like me is a scary sight to two lovely ladies such as yourselves. I want to thank you for your hospitality. Bandaging up my head and ankle, and the delicious bread and stew. I'll be on my way now. You know, when you're out here long enough away from the grounding force of civilization, your mind starts to do some weird things. Sometimes I wonder, did any of that happen? Did something call for these boys and force Louisa to walk out off that cliff? Or was it me? Did I do something horrible, so horrible I can't even allow myself to remember? I don't think I did. I don't remember myself that way, as someone who would do something so hideous that I would disappear 6 people. But the alternative seems even less plausible. What do you think? Do you think that I'm that kind of man? The kind of person who would kill? The kind of person who would push a woman I had been so in love with off of a cliff? Maybe I drank too much in that tent. Maybe she said no to me and I wasn't used to being told no. Maybe the boys heard, saw things I couldn't come back from. Maybe I had to make it all go away. But I don't think that happened. I don't. It's just my mind, you know. I've had a lot of time to think. It doesn't matter, though, does it? They're gone, and people will believe what they want. And if they choose to think that's what happened, then that's what happened. I can't change their reality. That's why I stayed in the woods. And now I'm going back to exactly where I should have stayed all along.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, and spend wisely, and parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/audio.
If you enjoy Twisted Mirror, I'd appreciate you taking a moment to rate and review the show. If you'd like episodes at least a week early and bonus peeks at the mirror, check out Twisted Mirror's Patreon at twistedmirrorpodcast.com.